Welcome to ATS Mix.
And I think until you start asking questions, you know, you're just going to buy whatever's offered to you on 6 o'clock news.
ATS Mix.
This isn't a talk show, it's a freak show.
From AboveTopSecret.com.
I'd also be skeptical of the people who are out there selling conspiracy theories.
The Internet's most popular conspiracy theory discussion board. ATS Mix. From AboveTopSecret.com.
In the name of Christ, just let us in!
Starts now.
John, before we get into this new show, I want to just simply stop the presses, if you will, and just simply give a tremendous amount of thanks to some people.
Okay.
I want to thank, and I know you'll agree with me, I want to thank Simon, Mark, Bill, some of our moderators, and the membership for the absolutely outstanding participation that we had, and that was on the memories of 9/11.
Yep. Thank you, folks. You guys did a great job, and we certainly do love when members participate, because that's what ATS Mix is really all about. We're doing this for you guys. And so we thank you for all your participation. In fact, we're still getting a number of U2U's emails and even voice messages with people telling us their experiences on that fateful day of 9/11. And we certainly do appreciate it, folks.
And it's a lot nicer hearing someone in their own words than trying to read a thread and imagine what the passion is. You just can't hear the passion. River Goddess and the rest of y'all, you just did a marvelous job. Marvelous. I think it's marvelous.
It's simply marvelous.
I love marvelous.
Fascinating. Hey, speaking of fascinating and marvelous, what is so marvelous about bumblebees, electricity, scuba diving, UFOs, teleportation, Otis T. Carr, and Nikola Tesla?
I'll tell you exactly what it is. That's the new number one single that's coming out from the Dave Rabbit and Von Trapp family singers on the ATS Mix record label.
I'm sorry. As close as your answer was, that is incorrect. Actually, they're all things that are being discussed in our interview with the fabulous Ralph Ring.
I love that guy.
I think everyone is really going to enjoy this interview because regardless of how outlandish, wild, fabulous, fantasy-like his personal experiences of his life are,
right,
they're true.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. They're true.
I was blown away. I was absolutely blown away. And you know, when we did some other interviews, Dr. Lear is an example, I was so enthralled with the thing. You said yourself, watching me, my expression, as I'm drawn into this world that you've been a part of for so many years. And this was another experience that just will be something that I'll remember the rest of my life. Ralph was an unbelievable interview.
You may or may not have noticed that there is a download link below this thread post. And there's a photograph of Ralph Ring's family, better known as who, Dave?
The Von Trapp family singers.
Now, why would you say that about Ralph Ring's family? They're such a nice group.
This is going to be a real
make it short.
There is a shortcut there that takes you to the podcast area. All right. To where we put this. We didn't put it in the ATS Mix area simply because of the logistics of the thing. But if you click on this shortcut, it will take you to the page to where it's just the Von Trapp family singers, and I've got the picture there again, and you can just stream it or you can download it. And basically what happened is Johnny and I are going to the opposite end of the convention center to do something, and you can see the picture here. Ralph Ring, his wife, and then some family members are around. There's like 9 or 10 of them. And they're sitting in this circle in the middle of the convention center. And, I mean, there's tons of people walking around, tons of people, thousands of people walking around. And John and I are walking to the corner, and I said, hang on a second, John. He said, well, I've got to go do this. And so he starts walking off, and I grab my recorder. Now, this was completely unrehearsed. There was not a single thing that they knew what I was going to do. And I cut my recorder on. I went up to them. And I don't want to spoil it for you, but I went in there and basically said, I've just now found the Von Trapp family singers from Austria. And I wonder if we could all do, this is Colonel Von Trapp. I wonder if we could have him lead us in a version of Edelweiss, which, of course, if anybody's seen The Sound of Music, that was the number one song of that particular musical. And without exception, every single family member started singing Edelweiss with me. You know, I'm thinking it's just going to be just me and Ralph maybe cutting up, but the entire family gets into it. And then what makes it even funnier is we all start singing at the top of our voices. We start singing Edelweiss. Well, Johnny's over here in the corner, and all of a sudden he's looking around. He's going, "What the hell is this?" And then he looks over and sees me leading the Ralph Ring Von Trapp family singers, and he comes running back over with the video camera, going to do some video and the thing. Of course, by the time he gets there, you know, we've already kind of finished it up. But what's funny about this whole thing, Johnny, and you know exactly what I'm going to say, is nobody remembered the lyrics. But everybody was humming or slapping their leg or bouncing their feet. It's a funny bit, but this just goes to show everybody how neat a guy Ralph Ring is. I mean, amazing, amazing, amazing person.
And, you know, speaking of amazing and fascinating, you know what I find so amazing, Dave, is?
I'm all ears.
Yeah. You need to replace or maybe actually remove the word short out of your repertoire. You don't know the meaning of short. And now, here's our interview with Ralph Ring.
ATS Mix.
Yeah, listen up.
From above, top secret.
Jesus Christ.
.com. Featured interview.
Well, Dave, I'm very excited today because we are going to be interviewing someone I've wanted to interview since we heard that we were going to get a chance to come here to the San Jose Expo.
That's fascinating.
I knew you would be fascinated by that. And, of course, I am talking about Ralph Ring. Now, a lot of you folks may not know who Ralph Ring is, so we thought we would do a little introductory interview with Ralph. Ralph, how are you today?
I'm just fine, thank you.
That's great. Now, some of our members, and we have a million-plus readers and listeners that are going to be hearing this interview initially, and then we're going to be going even further to the military district and having even more millions of people listening in. Why don't we give a brief description of why we're fascinated with Ralph Ring?
Well, it has to do with teleportation. I just happened to be at the right time in the right place to have been there and done that. And that was with a dear and good friend of mine, Otis Carr, who had worked for 3 years with Nikola Tesla, who is an inventor. He was a creative genius in his day. The Niagara Falls was his all the electricity that we enjoy today came initially from his inventions, the Tesla coil, the dynamos, the generators, and this was passed on down to Carr in his stead, because Tesla in his day, the people that were back, and he worked for Westinghouse and Edison Company, and was backed by the money people of those days, the chief money person, right. J.P. Morgan. And in a brief description, he went to Morgan one day and said, "I found it. I've got a lab in Colorado Springs. I've got one in Wardenhoff, which is above New York City, and I can produce electricity through the air, through the ground, around the earth, without the use of wires or poles or anything else." To which J.P. Morgan said, "Stop right there, Tesla. We can't go any further with this.
Right.
You're talking about people's livelihood, their children, their families. What are you going to do? You're going to ruin this economy."
Right.
I mean, I have people in copper industries and in the lumber industries, and you can't do this. Well, Tesla insisted that it will come to pass in our time, because we're living in a sea of energy. It's all around us. It's magnetic in nature. There's no cost to it. It goes on. It's in our bodies. It's outside our bodies. And if you educate yourself slightly on who and what you are, you'll find out that you're a part of this energy field. That your first year of high school, they teach you that energy cannot be created nor destroyed. So what is going on inside of this vessel you call a body? But energy. You're inside this. Which means and equates to magnetics in nature that is everywhere and doing everything that we need it to do. You don't, and And Morgan said, stop right there. We're going to tear down your towers. We can't go any further with this. And we're going to suspend your operations. In essence, that's what was said.
Right.
So that's what happened. And Tesla became, after a time, very, very discouraged. But he knew it was going to happen. He said, you know, he told Otis Carr, who he met in the hotel. He was staying in the New York hotel in New York. And Carr was a desk clerk in the hotel. And he had been going to school and studying different things. But when he met Tesla, Tesla befriended him, they became very, very good friends. Carr became like a sponge, and he just got absorbed all this wonderful information.
Sure.
Some of which dealt with consciousness that's beyond the peripheries of the brain to grasp sometimes. And that's where Tesla got all his information, from what he referred to as the ethers. It comes from an esoteric nature out of above and beyond the brain concept. The brain, he explained, was an instrument like unto a computer which operates the body in the third dimensional, as we call it. And that's all it's interested in. It's not interested in anything else but protecting, encouraging, and healing what its job is. In order to get where Tesla was and his technology, you had to go to the mind. The mind is an infinite state that operates from and through the use of your intuition.
Okay.
Not your instinct, but your intuition.
Right.
And it is a guidepost. If you follow your intuition, you get to the mind. And when you're in a state of mind, or in a still state, when you become still, all these things start coming to you that the brain is not interested in. Oh, I'm not interested in this or that or the other. But when you're a genius,
I don't have that problem.
I can attest to that. My co-hosts just don't have that problem.
Tesla, among other things, was a very humble. He was a very humble man, and as was Carr. And to show you how I became involved, at the time I met Carr, I had been working at a place called Advanced Kinetics in California, Southern California, and I was hired on as a laboratory technician. My basic interest all my life has been magnetism, and coincidentally, as I got hired on, they had just an engineer had just left the project, reasons unknown to me anyway. I found out later why, but. He left the project, and they needed to fill this space, so they hired me as a lab tech, and I got into the lab. My job was to fire electrons through a magnetic field without deflection. I had a cathode ray tube, which equates to a television, the gun that shoots your stuff on your phosphorus, shoots electrons.
Sure.
And I had to fire this through a horseshoe type of magnet, which is negative on one side, positive on the other, without deflection. They wanted me to get one through there. At the time, they were working on rockets for NASA and trying to navigate the rivers of space.
Now, what year was this again?
This is 1957, 58 maybe.
Wow,
57,
okay.
58.
All right.
And they were trying to get through these vortices, they call them, of magnetic fields in space so that they could at least achieve the speed of light eventually in rocket power without burning all the fuel that takes to get to meet the resistance of what's out there.
Right.
So anyway, I tried for a long time, and I had a high speed camera, I had a high speed oscilloscope, and I took pictures of every shot. And they'd come by and say, oh, well, very good, you haven't made it yet, use more power, use more force. And I began to...
It had to be frustrating for you.
Oh, yeah, because I was raised in the woods, and everything was natural up there. You know, everything came common sense, you know, simplicity.
Right.
And I said, what in the world are they doing here? So So the next bench over was working on levitation. They had a big coil, with winding copper windings around an iron core, and they were levitating a steel ball for about 8 minutes, and then they burned the coil up. They had to go check out another one. And they were $400 a copy, and this was in the 50s. And they didn't care. They had 10, 12, 14 coils a day.
Well, who were they getting their money from for the research?
Well, that's a good question. They're getting it out of your pocket, my pocket, and everybody else's pocket. Wow. This happened to be, as I found out, and I was told this, after I went home and I duplicated both their experiments, I had found that the difference between their experiment and mine was they were using force, and I was using the laws of nature. You allow things to navigate on their own power.
Okay.
With magnetic fields.
Sure.
So I pulsed the signal the first time, and it went through the field, and 20, 30 times after that, it continued to go through the field without deflection. I took pictures of it. I wrote up the experiment on the levitation experiment. I took a 15-inch woofer speaker, put it on the living room floor, which was my laboratory at home. And
I think I know where you're going with this, because that creates a wave formation with the more amplification that you give it.
Yes, that's exactly right. And here I levitated a ping pong ball all night long, and it stayed there. And I said, well, this is simple. It cost me $25 to do this.
Really?
So, and the comparison is the $400 a pop that they're doing for the 8 minutes, and you're being able to keep that levitated with a subwoofer, basically.
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
And so I told my wife, and the first time in months, she said, hooray, you're going to get a raise. We need the money. Take the experiments in and get us some money.
Cash it in, baby.
Cash it in. So I went in there and I talked to Dr. Weinhardt. He was a physicist. He was the head of the institute. And I said, well, I guess I got something here that I want to show you. And I'm ready for a raise. I didn't quite put it that way. But,
right.
So he looked at it and he said, well, what's this? And I told him what I had done. And I said, I did this with I'm not an engineer, I'm a technician, but I think we ought to pass this along to the boys back there because they're burning up all these coils. He said, no, you don't understand. Sit down, close the door. I want to tell you something, Mr. Ring, or Ralph, or whatever he called me. He said, I know it's that simple. I'm a physicist, and I know, and I've gone into metaphysics. I know what you're talking about here. I see you're dealing with natural laws. But unfortunately, the system you're living in is dealing with laws that we created, kind of ignoring natural laws via the force to push this a little electron through, and you pulsed it and got it through. He says, well, guess what? We're a government-funded research and development laboratory, and we're paid to look for answers, but not
find them.
Right.
Oh. I knew this where this was going.
So that kind of blew me completely out of the water. It blew my bubble. I just couldn't. I didn't know what to say. He told me we're going to have to shred this, and you cannot. There's a lid. There's a seal, a gag, or whatever on this. You can't talk about it. Not even to the engineers back there. Go back to work. We'll give you a few cents more if necessary, but go back to work and shut up.
So even though you got a couple of pennies raised, that had to be extremely frustrating for you.
It was. It was very, and that was the end of the world because I had previously worked as a diver. That was my vocation before, and I'd worked with Jacques Cousteau's U.S. Divers Corporation.
No kidding. Yeah,
and I was one of their head divers in the research and development.
For PADI, were you PADI certified? I was a PADI instructor too.
I'll be
darned. Oh, Cousteau's the one that got me so gung ho about diving, and you did something that I would have given my left eardrum for, and that is to be able to be with the Cousteau crew. Boy, that had to be an amazing experience for you.
It was. It was wonderful. And he's such a gentle man, and he reminded me of what I knew of Tesla and Mr. Carr. Very humble man. And I got into his research and development department. And we eventually gravitated out. I had more dangerous experiments to do, but I was a gung-ho maverick in those days, and I didn't care. I just said, keep giving me raises, and I'll do anything you want.
I like you.
Does it remind you of anybody?
Yes, it does. That's you and I, as a matter of fact. We love money.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. So anyway, but my wife became concerned. I had quite a few minor accidents. I had one where I had to come up 250 feet with no air. My regulator on my tank malfunctioned, and I ran out of air, so I had to come up. And which was no problem to a diver, as you know. You know,
exactly.
Just keep blowing.
Yeah.
And I didn't have to hang off because I was only down 2 or 3 minutes.
Right.
There was
right.
no problem.
So you had no decon.
But when my wife heard about it, because these blabbermouths, buddies of mine, said, oh, guess what? You know how that goes. They had to tell her that, and she says, oh, no, you've got kids here. We're raising kids. They need a father. I need you at home, and so forth and so on. So there was that newspaper ad with an ad for a lab tech at Advanced Kinetics, where I wound up. I just gave you a little background there about
sure.
how I got there. Well, I lost my job. I couldn't stand it anymore. And 2 weeks later, I said, I can't do it. I just can't do this anymore. It's wasting people's money. It's wasting my time. And but I didn't know how to face my wife.
Sure.
Yeah, that's the worst. That's the worst.
Yeah, I've been there.
So I finally went home, and I said, you know, I got something to tell me. And she says, oh, no, you don't come in this house till you tell me. You didn't lose your job or you didn't quit, did you? And I said, yeah, because I told her I was getting weary and very bored. She said, well, you don't come in till you get something else. So, well, what happened... I had talked to some people that were in a group called Understanding. It was created by a person by the name of Daniel Fry in California. This is in Costa Mesa, in Newport Beach area.
And now, was this the group that used to go up to the mountains and
yes.
in the forest? Okay, yeah.
And I'll kind of cut it short here,
okay.
But they said... well, what are your interests? I said, well, I've always wanted. I know magnetism, and I know I want floating homes, I want floating cities, floating countries. No problem, I can do it. This is my life's work. That's why I'm here. I want to do this. And they said, you're kidding. I said, no, I'm not. Well, we've got a guy in Oklahoma, Norman, Oklahoma, right now, by the name of Otis Carr, who's building spaceships and wants to do similar to the same things. We got to bring you guys together. So I said, fine. So they got Carr and his entourage. He had about 8 engineers and public relations people and everything. And they brought him out. But it was kind of undercover because they wanted to kill Carr all the time. They were trying very desperately to kill this information.
And by they, you mean the government or?
Powers that be. I don't know.
Right.
The people
group.
Maybe behind the government.
Like, men in black.
Like the big, yeah. Yeah, I ran into them too, but that's another story.
Oh.
But anyway, the powers that behind that control the government, if you will, the puppets or the government perhaps, are big companies that have vested interest in energy.
Sure.
Like oil companies, like electrical companies. They don't want to see anything change. They would like the investors to keep pouring money into their ideas on research that can't ever be developed. It just keeps going around and around and around.
Right.
Well, anyway, I brought Carr out. I met him right off the bat. We got along like you two guys do.
Right.
We got along good. Well, anyway, Carr came out and we talked and we hit it off real good. And he said, well, we got to get you guys out of here for a while. We got to decide what we're going to do. We're going to put you up at Lake Arrowhead. That's in Southern California. And they had a cabin up there, a big cabin. And they said, you guys go on up there and wait. We'll find you a place to operate. Well, we were up there for about a week. And during that time, I got into Carr's head. And he got into my head about what we had experienced and discovered in under natural law, what it's all about, universal law. And... he was explaining to me, passed on through Tesla, that, like I explained before, the brain is just an instrument. It's just a computer. And you've got to get above the brain or you're not going to get anywhere. There's no further progress. And I said, okay, well, what does that mean in building these spaceships? I want to go from the Flintstones to the Jetsons.
Absolutely.
And he says, well, so do I. So let's do it. At that time,
and I'm sorry, and what year again is this now?
1959.
Okay.
And so the phone rang, and they said, we got you a place. It's on the other side of the hill, down in a place called Apple Valley, Hesperia, California, next to Victorville. We got you a whole big laboratory, a whole big warehouses, offices, every machine shop, everything you need. Just coincidentally, it all happened. So get down there and get to work, which we did. We got down there, and we went to work. And we started, you know, putting things together. Carr had brought some of his equipment, some of his models, some of his prototypes with him. And so we were constantly modifying them. We were using different materials to do different things. One experiment that I was involved with that I think your listeners would be interested in, we had a 3-foot bench model that Carr explained that everything is vibrations, that everything is one. You have one energy, and that's magnetism. And then it goes into electromagnetism, electricity, and you have a Mr. Watts, a Mr. Fahrenheit, a Mr.
Right.
They put all their names on one thing. So it gets lost, and you have to go to school to figure it all out. And he said, no, everything's in frames of reference. Everything is true. He says, don't ever think that nothing is true. Everything is true in frames of reference. It's depending on how you look at it. It's the observer that changes things. It's not the thing itself. It's the observer.
Right.
And I said, wow, this is blowing me away here.
Right.
He says, well, we're going to do some experimenting here, and I want you to understand what you're going to be experiencing. I don't want you to get scared and run off. I'm like, oh, okay, what is it? He says, okay, we're going to fire this up with what he was calling magnetic resonance. It's resonating vibrations. And this little model, which was made out of T6 aluminum, T6 grade aluminum, very beautiful little craft, was sitting there, and he said, okay, we're going to fire it up. And they started the vibrations, and this thing kept just humming, and it was really a nice feeling for all of us. There was about 5 or 6 of us there. And I touched it, it was solid aluminum, and I said, wow, this is great, and it's going good. And he says, keep touching it, you know, Carr.
Right.
So I kept touching it, and all of a sudden I saw it was like jello. It was getting...
You mean to the field?
Right to the field. This is T6 aluminum, high-grade aluminum. And I said, man, this is impossible here. What am I doing here? He said, keep going. And he was so far above me in understanding laws that, you know, that I was later introduced to, that I was, you know, I was having fun. I was
right.
Having a ball. But so finally, as I was doing this, my hand went right through this T6 grade aluminum. I went right through the crowd.
Wow.
I could see my hand going in and out of this thing. And it was the most, I can't describe the feeling. It equates to something out of this world. I mean, it was really, really an experience.
Was there any type of sensation as you were touching it at all?
No. It was very warm and very natural, and it felt just like I put it through the air here. And I said, Carr cut the experiment. He says, okay, let's debrief this. I'll explain to you guys what happened. He said, remember, I told you before, you're energy. You're not this body that you think you are.
Right.
As long as you think you're just the body, you're not going to go anywhere.
Right.
You have to remember your energy. And when you synergize with energy fields, you resonate at certain frequencies that are around you. You nullify that gravitational or the molecular structures that are held together by magnetism. You honor and respect where you're going, what you're doing. And that's what you did. You, because you were open-minded, if you will, and at peace with yourself, you were able to bypass the brain. The brain said, no, this can't happen. But it was perfectly natural, and I accepted that.
I want to just ask one quick question. You brought up an interesting thought while you were telling us. Does this mean to say, then, if you had not been, these are my words, in a harmonious state, that perhaps it would have remained in a solid and not allowed you. Is that right?
Exactly.
So you had not gotten yourself in tune, or you wouldn't be in tune, rather, in whatever that reality was. Wow.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the way. And Carr said, remember, you always have to become in harmony. You have to be at peace with nature before nature will work with you. If you try to force nature, she's going to come back like a rubber band on you. Get in peace with nature and you can do anything. And he told us, he says, you are a creative being and you don't know how much power you have. You have the power of the universe behind you, because the mind is collectively all of us. It's you and me and him and Jane and, right. and John. And you have all that power. All you have to do is know who and what you are and raise your consciousness to that level, and you can do anything. And he says, and that's teleportation. And that's one of the things that Tesla had taught him, was teleportation. He said, the next experiment, it's going to be teleportation. He said, but before we go there, we're going to take a smaller model. We had a six-inch model that was levitating. It could levitate off the ground. And we have an audience with General Motors in Riverside, California. We're going to meet at a hotel and try and get them to be our manufacturers. He said, we want to take this wheel, this vertical wheel that's tearing up the ground and cement and asphalt, and turn it this way, get it off the ground horizontally, so you can go up and beyond.
And be better for environmentally all the way around. When you tear anything up,
Can I jump in here with a sidebar?
Please,
because
do.
You said something, and at 59, Ralph, you know, if I don't say it right off the get-go, I'm going to forget, and you're going to have to remind me. And since I haven't said it to begin with, you won't know what to remind me of. You were talking about magnets and magnetism. I'm sure you're aware, because of your scientific background, that Texas, I live in Dallas, you know, started the project of that super collider that they were going to build. I don't know if you recall it or not, but they spent millions.
I think it was billions.
Billions of dollars buying property. And the reason why I know so much about this particular thing is an extremely good friend of mine had property. And the government went in there, and this guy's ranch was worth, let's say, $1 million. I mean, he got like $250,000 for his property. But because it was the federal government, too bad, because this was considered a federal government project. Well, as you well know, they build all this stuff. You know, with the idea of what splitting the atom, I think, was a conceptual idea, right? Now, you said earlier you were talking about how magnetism played an extremely important role in what you were discussing. What could have they done if it had been built, Ralph? Could they have done something with a super collider with that kind of magnitude of magnetism? Could they have achieved some kind of new scientific insight if they had, in fact, not pulled the plug?
They were using force. They were trying to force nature. They were trying to use a power against a power that they can't win. Nature's got a little more power. And if they had considered the consequences of using excessive force and tried to understand what they were working with, the atom and beyond, then they would have come into a consciousness that would tell them, it would be guided in by this consciousness, and it would invite them to see these natural laws in working order for a few thousand dollars. I mean, it wouldn't be these billions or millions, because it doesn't take that. Everything in nature is simple. Everything, without exception, everything is simple. If you're finding something complicated, you're in the wrong area. Right. You've got to get back to simplicity.
Or you're just not paying attention.
Or not paying attention. So that's...
I want to ask a quick question.
Incidentally, one other thing about kaleidoscope. I mean, kaleidoscope.
I love the kaleidoscope.
That's a good one.
In fact, Johnny and I are going to the circus right after this.
Oh, wonderful.
But we're going to be a couple of clowns out there.
That's right.
Bada ding, bada boom.
That's right.
Sorry.
In Europe, they had built a $146 billion accelerator to find out what's smaller than the atom, the quartz, down. And they blew it up on the first try. They blew everything.
You're a kid.
All that money.
What year was this?
That was in 3 or 4 years ago.
Really?
In fact, we can give them a disc on that, I think. We can do that.
Okay.
It's copyrighted, but you can't copy it.
And by the way,
we'd like to acknowledge
Marcia Brown is
Marcia
here
with us.
Yes. And that's who you're hearing.
Yeah. And it's really funny when we're doing interviews normally. Johnny is in his studio, I'm in mine, and if we're interviewing somebody, we have them conference. Here we are sitting around like we're playing poker. And so Ralph is looking at Marcia, and I know you're wanting to jump in there and say something, so I figured I went like this, and she started grabbing my microphone.
Well, I kept waiting for you to play three trumps here.
Anyway, go ahead and ask her the question, because this will be an interesting insight here.
Okay, whose deal?
Yeah, whose deal? I like that.
Have any hearts?
It must be my turn.
That's right.
Okay, but we can give him a copy of a good friend of mine who I am associated with people that are doing what we did 50 years ago, and they're located in all of the United States, and this one person is a good friend of mine that has taken Einstein's theory and broken through the boundaries of unified field.
Really?
And his name, I can't pronounce the first name, his last name is Nissim.
Hyman.
And we'll give you a disc.
Oh, that'd be great.
And on that disc, he'll explain this explosion that happened.
Okay.
That because, in essence, what he's saying on his disc is our science, even to this present day, except for quantum, it's broken through the barriers, is still saying everything happened from the Big Bang. And he says, I got kicked out of school several times because when the professor said everything happened from the Big Bang, I asked one question. What was the question? Well, what caused the bang? What caused the bang?
Which is a great question.
Yeah. I got kicked out of school.
Ralph, while we're at this point, how can our members and our listeners and the fans, how can they find more information about the things that you have experienced in your life? Is there a website they can go to?
Well, I have avoided a website, except that everybody now is getting me into one, so I'll have one up and running probably within 6 months.
Okay, can you let Johnny and I know so we can post something where people can do?
Sure.
And until then, how would they find out information about you?
You can go to Ralph Ring on any internet. Just go to Ralph Ring, Google, YouTube, and type in Ralph Ring. There's a lot of information there. If it's not enough, you can get a hold of me personally on my email address, which is small case vortex, VORTEXXX, followed by the numeral 3 at AOL.com. And I guess to sum it up on what your listeners would like to hear, the 45-foot craft that I experienced.
Before you get to that,
sure.
There's just one part that I have to hear about, because I've been dying to hear this again, and that is your experience out in the woods, and you had a aerial phenomena that presented itself.
Well, I was raised in the woods, and that's where I learned a lot about nature. I had pestered an anthill one time and got stung to death because I didn't understand natural law. You don't do anything against nature unless you have a lot of respect for what it is and where it is and so forth. So in learning that, I learned about the bumblebee. My teacher in class at that time said, bumblebees can't fly. And I said, what do you mean they can't fly? There's one looking at me at the second out the window here. He said, no, they can't fly. Aerodynamically. Then he added, aerodynamically they can't fly. And I said, well, you know something? I'm going to go talk to the bumblebee because I'm not getting anywhere with you. So I did. I went back to nature, and I had discovered that bumblebees, in fact, don't fly aerodynamically. They levitate. And the way they do this is alongside of their larynx, they have a hollow cavity, just a tube, hollow tube, which is known as a resonator tube. And what they do, through the beat of their wings, they reach the resonant frequency of the surroundings. And in this case, we'll use the Earth's magnetic, or the rotation of the Earth, if you will, 8.5 hertz cycles per second. And once it reaches this resonant frequency, it nullifies the gravitational field and creates its own force field, a little bubble right around it, and it can go anywhere. So after that, I started seeing things in the sky, and they would come down, and they had inscriptions on them, they had windows, they had doors, I don't know, it's just all kinds of stuff. And I said, oh, well, how come we're not using this? This is where I want to get to.
Right, right.
So with Carr, when we were working, we had at one time a man and a woman showed up one night while we were talking, and they were just the nicest people I've ever met. I mean, they were just full of love, you know, and they were comic, they were everything. And I thought, well, one of the people around here. And they said, well, we want to help. I said, you haven't got much time before they're going to shut you down. They're coming, and they will shut you down. Said, oh, okay, well, who are you? Oh, well, that doesn't matter. And they explained more and more about consciousness, how important higher consciousness is. Because as long as you're below that, you're in servitude. People do jobs they hate. People hate their relatives, their friends, their dogs, because they're stuck. They're stuck, and they can't get out. And until they get up over that, they're going to be stuck. They said, well, what's that got to do with spaceships? Said, well, we're here to show you that by this magnetic resonance, and Carr knew quite a bit from Tesla about it. He says, this is how everything works. And once you apply these techniques, you can go anywhere. So Carr says, okay. And that's when we set up an appointment with General Motors. We went down, we talked to them, said, this is what we want to do. And here's a levitating device right on his desk. And he had his engineers look at it, and he said, yeah, well, where's the wires and all this, you know, this magic trick and all this. And take a look at it. And they examined it and everything, and they nodded to the guy, and they said, yeah, there's something here. And the guy said, no, there isn't. He said, no. No. We're building automobiles. We're making money to pay the bills with on automobiles.
Right.
And this thing, it's running off of what? I don't know, but we can't use this. There's no gasoline. There's no oil. There's no moving parts. What are you talking about? Get out of here.
Right.
And he asked Carr, you know, he said, if you put them up, we're going to shoot them down.
Right.
You can't have this. Well, anyway, we left there, and Carr said, we don't have much time. They don't want us around, and we're going to have to do something. So he said, we're going to go ahead with a teleportation experiment with a big craft. We had a big 45. We had two of them. We had this one was ready to go. They got it. The engineers got it all ready to go. And he said, now what we're going to do is we're going to from here, from point A to point B, is where we're going to go. And that equates to about 10 miles around our lab here. And we've already measured this in electronic frequencies, magnetic frequencies, color, light frequencies, and it equates to the color of aquamarine. And it's vibrating over there at that frequency. So when you get in the craft, all you're gonna do is concentrate. They had a big crystal in the center of the craft, and it had a laser coming up from the bottom, and they had all these colors from infrared to ultraviolet all the way around. It's gorgeous. And he said, "Now just I don't want you to use the brain. Don't doubt this. Don't fear this. Just relax and enjoy it." He says, "You're gonna have a wonderful time." And we did. He was a very convincing person. So we followed him, and we watched this thing change from these multicolors into one color, which was aquamarine. And the whole inside of the craft lit up in this brilliant, beautiful aquamarine color. And the next thing, we were in touch. We didn't have cell phones or anything, but we could hear Carr all the time. And he said, okay, that's it, boys. Come on down for debriefing. And we were only there a few minutes. And I looked at the other engineers there, and I said, I don't think we did anything, do we? And he said, no, I don't think so either. So we got down and out of the craft. We came into Carr's office, and he says, I know what you're going to say. He said, now sit down and tell me about your trip. And we said, well, it didn't work.
What trip?
And he says, oh, you didn't go anywhere, huh? And he said, I'm sorry, but we were there. We looked at each other. We saw the crystal, and we were relaxed. We didn't go anywhere. He says, okay, now empty your pockets. What? You empty your pockets. And we started pulling out these stones, these grass, pieces of earth, sticks, everything, pulling them out of our pockets. Where in the world did all this come through? Because we had jumpsuits on, and there were just two pockets, right, and they were loaded with these things. And he said, well, that's teleportation. He said, and he said, your brain will catch up with you someday, and you'll remember this. But he says, until it starts accepting more, you're going to doubt everything that happened. And we said, well, what did happen? He said, we fired you up here, you levitated, and for 5 to 10 seconds, you disappeared, and then you reappeared, and the experiment was over.
My Lord.
He says, to you, in your time, was about 15 minutes. You got downrange, you opened the shaft, you got down, and you picked up these rocks and the stone, put them in your pocket. And it was witnessed, incidentally. It was in a paper, it's on the internet somewhere, where a police officer witnessed the craft coming down and saw three guys coming out, picking up rocks and stones, getting back in and disappearing.
So which must have been a shock to the policeman. What are these guys with jumpsuits doing, putting rocks and grass and twigs in there?
Yeah. It was. So anyway, we got back, and he said, that's teleportation. He says, you teleport with your mind, not your brain. Your brain is, this is a schoolroom, and your brain is consistently trying to keep you in school. But if you want to graduate and go beyond this, if you get bored with this, you want to go on, you got to use your mind, and that's how you do it. So he said, now we're gonna the next one, we're going to take this craft, we're gonna go over Los Angeles, we're gonna move around, so everybody, we're gonna yell and scream so that everybody can see what we're doing. We're gonna make sure that all the people can see what we're doing and know that it's real. And that was our next experiment to come up. Before that happened, these people with 10-wheeler trucks pulled up with all kinds of people in uniforms on, and this guy came up with a paper, and this is documented. It's, I forget the code number they used, but they said, you're attempting to overthrow the monetary system of the United States. We are here to cease and desist, or whatever it is, just to stop everything. We're going to pull all your records, all your files, and all your gear, and you're not to talk about it anymore. We found out later they took the big 45-footer to Los Alamos, New Mexico, and it's now, as far as I still know, 9 feet, 9 levels underground. I know that because a professor that was in part of the Information Freedom of Information Act had gone there and seen it. He says, oh, I know where that thing is. I saw it down there.
Really?
So that's why I know it was there. So
that's fascinating.
So they're you know, it goes on from there, but I know you guys are running out of time, and my family's getting hungry. But I later on kept experimenting. We went from moving parts to no moving parts. With the advent of solid-state circuitry, we got into where there's no moving parts. And right now, these vehicles, transportation, habitation vehicles, like the Jetsons, if you'll go to your local TV station, they're real, they're in existence, they're waiting in the wings. For anybody that wants to wake up and see them, they're slightly removed from this regular way of seeing things, because you have a belief system.
Right.
And if you believe in something, you can also disbelieve. You can be told to disbelieve it. You have to get into a knowing state. I know I'm alive. I know I'm sick. I know I'm hungry. Those are natural laws. Once you get into natural laws, you'll see them all over the place, because we're flying them all the time.
And that's about it.
On behalf of the ATS Mix, AboveTopSecret.com, and the world, and, of course, my co-host Dave Rabbit.
And, of course, I would be the lovely co-host Dave Rabbit. And also, for this beautiful young lady right here.
Thank you, my dear.
We want to thank you for your time, your courtesy, and what an amazing person you are, Ralph. I am so privileged to know you, and I can't thank you enough for your generous time.
And coming out of retirement, so to speak, to bring this knowledge for us.
Well, I'd like to close with this one thing.
Okay.
I am just a mirror of who you guys are. I'm just your mirrors.
Oh, that's a scary thought.
Okay.
Do we look that good? That's my question.
You are that good.
There you go.
You are that good.
Well, listen, thanks, everybody. We really appreciate it.
ATS Mix from AboveTopSecret.com is over.
You've been listening to the ATS Mix with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous. If you have a comment, suggestion, an opposing view, or would like to participate in a future show of ATS Mix, please contact Dave or Johnny at www.abovetopsecret.com. The views expressed on ATS Mix do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of the Above Network, LLC, or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening. You may now reattach your tinfoil hat.